Welcome back to Fritz and Friends. I am Cheryl Fritz, coming to you on 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Pleased to have on the phone with me now Lawrence Reed, who is president of the Foundation for Economic Education, a former president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, now president emeritus. Good evening, Lawrence. How are you?
Hey, just terrific, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm very well. I was sorry that I couldn't get to see you speak at MSU this past week. Had some friends that did go to see you and were very impressed with the discussion that you had and kind of wanted to take off. I mean, the country's in an interesting place. We live in interesting times. And when we talk about the Foundation for Economic Education, give us a little background what that is about.
Okay. Your listeners can learn a lot more about us, by the way, if they go to our website at fee.org. But we've been around since 1946, headquartered in New York, but now with an office also in Atlanta, Georgia. Our focus is not just the country, but even beyond. We try to advance ideas of individual liberty, limited government, free markets, private property, rule of law, and personal character, which we think is very much a part of that total message. And we do it through programs like seminars with a special focus on high school and college students, and a lot of appearances in the media and before audiences all over the world.
When you were speaking at MSU this past week, a friend of mine that did go to hear you said that you spoke of, and part of your topic was about free trade. And boy, this is a topic in the news on a regular basis here.
Yes, it sure is. And it has been for some time. In America and in our history, we've had debates over free trade going back almost to the beginning of the country. And sometimes it's been the number one issue in the country. But I'm a firm believer, as most economists are, in free trade, and that when governments try to raise barriers in the form of tariffs or quotas, that the end result of that is trade conflicts and lower standards of living.
Well, and when we talk about free trade, and I had Senator Debbie Stabenow on the show last week, sir, and she, of course, brought up China, and she didn't have a lot of great things to say about China and any kind of free trade with them. Our markets are open. Theirs are not. They're just one example.
Well, keep in mind, politicians usually take these issues and demagogue them to death, you know, by finding somebody overseas that they can knock and say, you know, in the case of the Chinese, well, they're not doing something right, and therefore the answer is to somehow protect American firms by raising barriers of some sort. But they rarely look beyond the immediate and consider what the side effects would be of doing that kind of thing. If you close the door to imports, you will sooner or later close the door to exports. If foreigners can't sell here, they can't earn the dollars that they need to buy here. And even though sometimes foreign governments do things that make it difficult for us to compete, we shouldn't think for a moment that we're innocent in that. The U.S. government all the time is intervening in trade and massively subsidizing one sector or another. I mean, how would you like to be a poor farmer in India and get dumped on by a ton of American free grain as part of our foreign aid program? Or how would you like to be a sugar grower in Haiti and have to deal with American quotas that protect American sugar producers? So we're not, you know, we shouldn't throw stones since we live in such a glass house and have all kinds of trade interventions of our own.
What are the obstacles and barriers to making free trade work well?
Well, a lot of it is, frankly, politicians who should know better and who demagogue this stuff and who ought to be out there talking about the importance of opening borders, not closing them and not trying to scapegoat our problems by fingering somebody else. And Senator Stabenow does a lot of that. But I think that a secondary obstacle is the lack of understanding. There are a lot of people who seem to think that if we just raise barriers, keep those foreign goods out, that automatically that will help us because we'll have to buy more goods made here. But they have to understand that trade is ultimately a two-way street. And you, as I say, you can't close the door to imports without closing the door to exports. That's a very painful lesson we should have learned from the 1930s when America raised barriers dramatically, triggered a trade war, and virtually shut down the economy.
When we're talking about we look at look to Washington these days, sir, and we look at what's happening. The phrase we keep hearing, the can is getting kicked down the road with the budget mess, and trying to pass a budget that should have been passed last year. Now we're looking at raising the debt ceiling. What is your perspective on what's happening there right now?
The problem in Washington is a spending problem. It's absolutely unconscionable, and it's worse than just bad policy. By running up these massive debts, by spending like the old phrase, drunken sailors, which is an insult, I think, to sailors, Washington is bankrupting the country. And I think we ought to put our foot down and say no more of these debt ceiling increases. We've done that 74 times in the last 30 or 40 years. I think since 1960. And so, effectively, there is no limit. Every time we bump up against it, they just spend more and raise it again. So I think the answer is to slash spending. When you've got a Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid of Nevada, getting up as he did a month ago and saying on the Senate floor that we can't cut spending for the subsidies for the Cowboy Poetry Festival in Nevada, we've got a real problem, and they just can't quit their addiction to spending in Washington.
So, what about this? It seems like scare tactics coming at the people of the United States. They tell us if they don't raise the debt ceiling, everything's going to crumble.
Yeah, and they've been saying that for years. They said it when our federal spending a few years ago was $2 trillion less. They said that we couldn't cut. So here we are, you know, another $2 trillion in spending. And additional debt, and they say the same thing. They lack courage. They lack character. They have to think of the long run, not just the short run, and what it takes to get elected. They got to be putting the country's future first, and too few people in Washington are willing to do that.
I mentioned off the top of the show, Lawrence, that you are the former president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy and currently president emeritus. Mackinac Center hit the news recently, was in the headlines after some FOIA requests that are made that are fairly routine for the Mackinac Center, is my understanding. What is your take on that, if you don't know all the details, just in general, what was behind that and the reaction?
Well, I do know that the Mackinac Center was not requesting something that was personal or that was related to affairs between academic affairs between teachers and students. It was looking rather for any indication that government employees at universities on taxpayer expense were using work time and taxpayer provided resources to do some things that perhaps they shouldn't. And if the mainstream media would do its job and look into some of these things, independent organizations like the Mackinac Center perhaps wouldn't have to. So, it's painful to have to do these things sometimes, but I think in time, when all of this settles, the Mackinac Center will arrive at some pretty interesting results.
Yeah, I have a feeling the conclusions they come to, we all may be a bit surprised by.
Yeah, that's been the case, in fact, in many occasions. So we'll see. But those who were squawking, I think, ought to realize, look, if you're doing things you shouldn't be doing on the taxpayer's dime, then that's your problem.
To say that you're a world traveler would be a massive understatement. In traveling as a freelance journalist to many countries and places, frankly, that most of us wouldn't go, Lawrence.
Yes. In fact, there are a few places I've gone in when I was younger that I'm not sure I'd go today or do again.
I mean, you've been to, you know, Cambodia. You've been in Mozambique with rebel forces. I mean, dangerous territory.
Well, that's right. But, I have a passion for advancing individual liberty. And when people around the world are facing tyranny, I realize there's not a whole lot that one person can do to help, but in a few occasions, I've tried to do what I could, and that's no more than what I think a lot of Americans would do if they had the opportunity.
And when you go to some of these places and talk with these folks, I'm guessing they're appreciative that you're there and they're understanding what is behind your visit.
Yes. I mean, I've had a few problems when I was in Poland in 1986. when the communist regime was still very much in power, I ran into some trouble with government officials who didn't like the fact that I was meeting with people who were active in the underground resistance. But, that's history, and it produced a lot of stories I still talk about today. And in a very small way, I'd like to think I helped very good people liberate their country so that Poland is a free nation today.
Well, Lawrence, I would love the opportunity to talk to you again as different subjects come up, as I'm sure they will on a regular basis. I appreciate so much your time for me and my audience this evening.
Oh, my pleasure, Cheryl. Thank you much. And now that we're Facebook friends, you can reach me anywhere, anytime.
I have a feeling I'm going to enjoy your quotes. I'm looking at a couple of them right now.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Lawrence. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Lawrence Reed, who is president of the Foundation for Economic Education. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com after this.